So it's really a pleasure to spend time with all of you and to have the opportunity to collaborate. I really feel that everything we do here in Camp Simcha is a collaboration between many, many different parts and aspects of the camp that need to come together in a synergy in order to create the product that all of us request, that all of us want. And certainly to have the halacha side of it together with the medical side of it is one of the most important partnerships that are required in this camp. It's what makes us unique. It's what makes us special. The fact that we have the opportunity to do everything here al pi halacha. I don't know what everybody does during the year and where exactly you work and whether or not you work on Shabbos. I have an understanding that for the most part, many of the medical staff who are here do not generally have to go on calls on Shabbos and are not generally expected to be in the hospital on Shabbos, and that's why this experience here in camp is sometimes a little bit unusual. It's something that makes some of our medical staff uncomfortable over the years I've seen, and just a discussion about it I think should put everyone at ease. And I can say that all of us are here to be helpful in any way. We're open to any questions. I can't say that I have all the answers, but I'm happy to be transparent about that when I don't know the answers. I do know people who do know answers, and I'm happy to be helpful to you in any way that I can be. By way of introduction, the Gemara says that there was a very robust discussion amongst a number of the Tanaim, minayin lepikuach nefesh shedoches haShabbos. How do we know that pikuach nefesh will override Shabbos? We know that Shabbos is one of the most important and critical mitzvahs in Kala Torah Kula. So much so that the Gemara says, someone is mechal Shabbos is dino ka'akum. So obviously we take it seriously. Somebody who eats in Yom Kippur, obviously is chayv kares, but it doesn't say dino ka'akum. Somebody who is mechal Shabbos is dino ka'akum, which means that Shabbos is considered a very high priority. And yet at the same time, the Gemara says that we assume that even a higher priority than that is this idea of saving a life, this idea of making sure that people are safe and people are healthy and people are taken care of on Shabbos. The Gemara comes to the conclusion that we learn this from the pasuk of V'chai Bahem, where the Torah says that we have an obligation to do whatever we can to live al Kiddush Hashem, to make sure that people are healthy and able to observe the mitzvahs. I just told the girls the other night, and I think it's such a phenomenal mashal, just to make us understand it a little bit better. I saw in one of the svarim of Reb Shimshon Pinkus, he says, imagine you have a piece of real estate, a big skyscraper, 100 floors, and thousands of offices in that building, and many executives who are there, major companies that are running. So the value of the building is, let's say, $500 million. But there's a box in the basement where they have, what he writes, kaftorim. It's the electric box, where you have all the controls for the entire building. So he says, how much does the building cost? The building costs $500 million. How much did it cost them to put together the electric box in the basement? Probably $50 to $100. They went to Home Depot, got whatever they needed, bought the switches, bought the controls. They put it all together and it's there. Imagine if one day someone goes downstairs and decides to rip out the electric box. So although it's only worth $100, if you don't have the electric box with all the switches, with all the cables, the whole building is worth nothing. If you don't have air conditioning and you don't have lights and you don't have Wi-Fi and you're not able to run all the buildings that are there and all the offices that have to run, then you have no value to the property at all. And if Pinkus writes, I think it's just a beautiful way to frame it. When we talk about this mitzvah of V'chai Bahem, you look at a rich and robust Yiddishkeit that we observe, and you look at a life of 613 mitzvahs, and you read the Nefesh HaChaim, and you, maybe you don't, I don't know, maybe you do, but you look at the Nefesh HaChaim one time in your life, and you see what happens when a person observes a mitzvah. He's impacting other worlds and all the worlds out there, and things beyond our understanding and comprehension. And yet, with all of that, he says, you need to have the electric box. You need to have the switches working. If the electric box is not working, if you rip it out and the power goes out, you don't have the ability to impact other worlds. I'll tell you, last year, there was a discussion, why am I saying last year? It was before COVID. So like everything before COVID, I say is last year, but it wasn't. Yeah. So there was a discussion in my home between a number of very, very high-level psychologists who are extremely involved in the Frum community, and they wanted to have a conversation about some of the cutting-edge issues regarding Frum people and homosexuality. And it was a very robust, a very important discussion, and we had the conversation with Rav Asher Weiss. He was in my house, and we thought that he was a very good person to have this particular conversation with. It's something that all of our communities are struggling with, so many families are struggling with, so many individuals are trying to find a place for themselves and an understanding of where they are, where they're not, what they should or shouldn't do, and how families should react. And one of the questions that the psychologist posed was, when we have a child who feels that they have these kinds of tendencies and sometimes is suicidal and sometimes has major psychological trauma based on whatever they're going through, is it more important that we deal with that emotional discomfort that they have, or is it more important that we try to keep them from and we try to make them understand that, you know, they have to be shomrei Torah mitzvahs? And Rav Asher Weiss's answer, the therapist said it far more beautifully than I just presented it. I just made it very simple here. But Rav Asher Weiss's answer is, if you're not alive, you can't be frum. And I think that that's such a instructive comment. If you're not alive, you can't be frum. So the first thing we need to do is make sure we have the baseline. And the baseline is exactly what he said. I'm going to wait 1 second. The baseline is exactly what he said, and I think it could be applied to every situation here. If you're not alive, you can't be frum. It's exactly what Rav Shimshon Pinchas is describing in this mashal. You can have a multi-million dollar piece of property, you can have a business that's running, but if you're not alive, you can't run the business. If you don't have the control switches working and the electric box doing what it's supposed to do, we cannot have any of the religion that we so much admire and we so much live by and respect. And that's why it's our sacred task here as a team to make sure that we do whatever we can to provide those opportunities for every camper who is here, for every staff member that is here, in order that they should be able to have the multi-million dollar property, which is the outcome of all that we provide them with. So the Shulchan Aruch, when it talks about the laws of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, is extremely encouraging. The Shulchan Aruch writes that when we have the opportunity to save a life on Shabbos, I was just talking to Dr. Steinhardt this morning. Am I allowed to share what we were talking about in shul? It's okay? Okay. Dr. Steinhardt said that he has yahrzeit on Thursday for his grandparents and his parents' entire town, correct? In Europe. That was wiped out on a certain day. It's assumed that they were all taken to a concentration camp, and he has yahrzeit. So he said, it just so happens that it turns out that the Daf Yomi is going to be finishing Maseches Yevamos this week, and he can make a siyum in honor of the commemoration of the yahrzeit. Sounds beautiful, and it's really special, and it's really nice, but what I said to Dr. Steinhardt is, can there be a greater aliyas haneshama for all those family members than the fact that you're going to spend your day on the yahrzeit saving more lives and making sure that there are going to be more Jews in the world who are able to function as Orthodox Jews or practicing Jews or just healthy and vibrant human beings who are able to do exactly what they're supposed to do? Can I feel, can I imagine a greater aliyas haneshama than that? And I think it's the privilege that all of you have. To be involved in life-saving activities is a privilege that most of us in the world don't have. And I think it's the most noble of professions. And it's something that we celebrate. It's something that we encourage. It's something that all of us are here to help support. And it's something that the Shulchan Aruch writes, when you're faced with a scenario on Shabbos which presents itself, giving you the opportunity to help save a life, the Shulchan Aruch says, not only are you allowed to, but you should feel encouraged to do so. It is a mitzvah to be involved in such activity. Let us make no mistake. My father has told me this story multiple times about a very tragic story that somebody told him. A Rav that he's friendly with was called before Yom Kippur, and the doctors had suggested that a certain patient should be eating on Yom Kippur. And the spouse of this woman was concerned. He said, oh, it's Yom Kippur, are you sure? You gotta call the rabbi. Called the rabbi. The rabbi said, I gotta talk to the doctor. So he put the doctor on the phone. The doctor and the rabbi are talking to each other, and the rabbi asks him, is the patient going to potentially die if they don't eat on Yom Kippur? And the doctor said, no. So the rabbi said, okay, well then, there's no heter to eat on Yom Kippur. And that's what happened. The patient fasted on Yom Kippur, and a few days later passed away. Now, what went wrong? What happened? A lot of things went wrong, but the miscommunication was as follows. The doctor called back and said to the rabbi, how did you tell us that the patient should fast on Yom Kippur? Look what happened. She died. He said, well, didn't I ask you if she's going to die? He said, oh, I thought you meant, is she going to die on Yom Kippur? Of course she was going to die if she didn't eat, but I thought the question was, is she going to die today? Let us make no mistake, and that's a tragic mistake, a fatal mistake, a horrific mistake, miscommunication. When we talk about pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, it doesn't mean, is the patient going to potentially die today? It means, by us not doing an intervention today, are we going to negatively impact, even potentially negatively impact, the outcome of this patient in the future? It may not be now, it may not be tomorrow, it may not be next week, it could be in 5 years. But if some negative implication is going to happen because we're holding back on Shabbos from doing what needs to be done medically for this patient, that is something that we do not have a right to do, and it's something we need to be very careful about. So much so, and I stress this to the counselors, everyone here is a medical professional. You look at a situation and you size it up, and you know how to react, you know how to respond, and if you don't, you have other people to consult with. Our counselors do not know how to make that determination. So the protocol in this camp is, when something unusual happens, they're supposed to contact one of you. They're supposed to contact one of the members of the medical staff. So what happens, right, to Shulchan Aruch, if somebody jumps in their car on Shabbos, total chil of Shabbos because they thought it was a life-threatening situation? Turns out they come to the infirmary and you're like almost laughing at them. Like, just put a Band-Aid on, come on. You know, you didn't have to come here, you didn't have to drive here, you didn't have to alert us. Why'd you wake us in the middle of the night? Which you would never say anyway, but you're thinking to yourself. Shulchan Aruch says, that person who drove to the hospital, who came to the infirmary, who made the phone call, who turned on the phone, who did everything it needs to be do, still did a mitzvah. Even though it turns out that the whole thing was unnecessary. Why? Because from their perspective, they're not medically trained, they're not medically inclined, they don't fully understand the situation, they don't know how to size it up properly, and from their perspective, they thought that they were doing something that was a life-saving activity. It turns out, once they met the medical professional, that it was totally unnecessary. But still, if they felt they were doing something that was appropriate, that is not something that they should feel bad about at all. The Ramban writes a very imposing statement. The Ramban says, if you have somebody who decides that on principle they want to be a chassid, it doesn't mean a Hasidic Jew, it means somebody who wants to be overly righteous, and they say, you know what, it's Shabbos, I'm not going to go to the hospital, it's Shabbos, I'm not going to take care of what needs to be taken care of, it's Shabbos, and therefore I'm not going to take out the IV line that is up this evening, as all of us are aware. We need to make sure that this camper is taken care of, and that the IV line is taken out when it's supposed to be taken out. We're not going to wait till after Shabbos. I don't need to tell you that every extra minute that an IV line is inside of someone, it's a risk of infection. We know that. It's simple. It could lead to sepsis. It could lead to lots of other things. This is literally ABC of medicine. Even simpletons like me who know nothing still know that. And yet, we need to do whatever it is that needs to be done. Let's say you have someone who says, you know what, let's be machmir. Let's not go ahead and do this because after all it's Shabbos. Writes the Ramban, Hareze chassidus shel shtus. The lashon of the Ramban is, you're a chassid shote. You know what a chassid shote means? The Gemara describes a chassid shote. The Gemara says if you have a woman who is swimming and somebody passes by the swimming pool and notices that she's drowning, she doesn't know how to swim, and she's falling beneath the water and she's losing her balance, and the guy says, well, it's just not appropriate. Well, am I going to jump into the water and save this woman? I mean, I don't normally hug women. I don't normally touch them. So in order to get her out of the pool, I'm going to have to do something I'm very uncomfortable doing. It's not for me. The Gemara says, that's not righteous. That's called a chassidus shel shtus. That's called a chassid shote. Says the Ramban, this is the same. And the Ramban says that a person who chooses to do that, dino kishofech damim. The Ramban says, you are considered like someone who is shofech damim. Why? Because sometimes by making a fatal decision like that, it can actually be a fatal decision. V'harehu mischayev b'nafsho. So the Ramban really encourages us and makes us understand that we need to do whatever we would generally do during the week, we need to be comfortable doing on Shabbos. Now, is there a best practice and how we can do it while accommodating for Shabbos? Of course there is, and that's what we're here to talk about, some of the details. But just in the general category, it's something that I think is very, very important for us to establish the foundation of all that we're going to be doing over the next 24 hours. It's important that we all be on the same page about that. One of the great gedolim in Europe, are you all rushing to go back somewhere? Should I like cut this down, make it shorter? Okay. Baruch Hashem, you're bored with nothing to do. It should continue like that for the next 10 days. Until everyone gets home. And, you know, one of the things that moves me most is when Dr. Steinhardt and Shul, every time we lay, makes him a Shabarach L'cholim for all the Chole Machanenu. And it's just so touching that we have a medical staff here who understand that they're in partnership with the Ribono Shel Olam, and that all of us need the help and assistance and guidance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make us be successful in our mission of everything that we set out to do here. One of the great Gedolim in the 1800s was the Avnei Nezer. He lived in Europe. He had a son who wrote a set of Svarim that became very famous called Shem Yishmuel. The Shem Yishmuel had a son-in-law who was very sick. And one year the doctor told him, before Yom Kippur, you're not in a position where you're able to fast. You need to eat on Yom Kippur. And his son-in-law felt very uncomfortable about it. What do you mean? I've been fasting Yom Kippur my whole life. When am I going to eat Yom Kippur now? He wasn't comfortable with it. So the Shem Yishmuel writes a letter, an open letter that he published, but it was written to his son-in-law. I'm going to read you just a few lines from it, where he writes, Kasher Yom HaKippur Memash Meshuba, when Yom Kippur is on its way, Hinini Lahazhircha Meyod, I want to warn you, my son-in-law, Lebal Titzdak Harbe Bidvar Hatzom, don't try to be righteous, don't try to be a tzaddik when we talk about fasting. Kefi Asher Yom HaLecha HaRofei, Kein Tishmar La'asos. Exactly what the doctor tells you to do is what you as the patient need to do. And I think this is important for us to impress upon our campers. I spent hours and hours and hours yesterday, and I was proud to spend the time. But Bracha was helpful, and many others here were helpful as well. Rachel, the physical therapist, was helpful. Talking to a camper, just trying to get her on the same page as we are about accepting the fact that we're going to be giving her medical treatment. And I realize it's so sincere of her not to want it. And it's so sweet and genuine of her to say, you know, it's Shabbos and it's okay. But part of our job is to help sensitize our campers, to try help sensitize those who need our help to the fact that they need to accept our help and they need to be comfortable with it. Now, I think it needs to be done with sensitivity, which is why we spent hours and hours on the phone with this young woman yesterday and her parents and her counselors. And I was up till 1:30 in the morning last night talking to both of the counselors. They actually felt it was not good enough for me to give them a shiur. They said, we want to learn it inside, which was fine. So I had a tri-vrusa last night with the two of them. It was perfect. And we went through the Shulchan Aruch, and we had an opportunity. And it was really special. And the sincerity, but I think after that conversation, they had an opportunity to feel much more comfortable about what it is that they're about to do. And I think sometimes we may need to do that for a camper that comes in and feels a little uncomfortable. Maybe the camper never use an electric wheelchair on Shabbos. The option is not stay in your room the whole Shabbos when we have a camp running here. That is not the option. The option is not, let's not use the hospital bed this Shabbos because it's Shabbos and therefore, you know, we don't want to press the buttons, we don't want to touch any of the toggles and risk a tremendous, tremendous liability for all of us, not a professional liability, but a real liability for all of us that this camper will potentially fall off of her bed as we're transferring her from the bed to the wheelchair. It's unreasonable. It's unconscionable for us to think about that. We need to do what's safe and healthy for her, and we need to help her make herself comfortable with what it is that we're providing for her. Now again, what I described to the counselors is there's a way to do it al yedei shinui. It's not so difficult. You just have to think in advance a little bit and sensitize yourselves to the shailas that are going to come up. But it's something all of us can do. But I think we can be helpful as a staff to sometimes encourage the campers to appreciate what it is that we are doing for them. So the Shem Yishmuel has this letter. But I think the most critical line of the letter is the following. Don't feel uncomfortable with the fact that the doctor is instructing you to eat on Yom Kippur. Ki mi shatziva latzum b'yom ha-kippurim. The same God, the same Ribbono Shel Olam that told you to fast on Yom Kippur 99% of the time is the same Ribbono Shel Olam that told you that you should listen to the medical staff that's telling you to do otherwise this year. So why do you feel that this mitzvah is more important than that? There's no difference. They're on the same level. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, and it's such a beautiful comment. He says, anyone here made a Shabbos bris? Anyone have a boy that had a bris on Shabbos? I had two Shabbos bris milas. My bris was on Shabbos. Also two of my children had a bris on Shabbos. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, do you feel bad when the child has a bris milah that falls out on Shabbos? Who feels bad about it? It's a great simcha. It's beautiful. I happen to think it's extra beautiful because normally you have a bris on a Tuesday morning. Everyone's coming, rushing, and they're out. Shabbos, it's like everyone has an opportunity to be together the whole Shabbos and the simcha extends. But yet, Reb Shlomo Zalman writes, does anyone feel guilty about the fact like, oh, Nebuch, we have to do a bris on Shabbos. Like, I wish this baby would have been born a different day of the week. No, nobody thinks that. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Bayom Hashmini Yimol Basar Laso." On the eighth day, the Gemara says, "Afilu B'Shabbos." Even if the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, this is what we do. And therefore, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, the same way we don't feel guilty about that, why would we feel guilty administering treatments to any patient or to anyone in our care if that is what is needed? Something that I always found to be very moving. There's a sefer called Torah Sayoledes. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's a very beautiful sefer that's all about the halachos that pertain to a woman who's going to have a baby or just had a baby, postpartum, like all of that, a lot of different halachic issues that are discussed in there. But in that sefer, he has one paragraph which he quotes from the old Machzorim, and I think it's so beautiful, where he says, we know if a woman has a baby right before Yom Kippur, with a certain time before Yom Kippur, she's not supposed to fast. And he says that a woman, or for that matter, anybody who has to eat on Yom Kippur, the old Machzorim in Europe used to have the following paragraph, and it had instructions. Somebody who needs to eat on Yom Kippur as per the doctor's orders should say the following before doing so. Listen to this. And I wish we can like hang this up in the infirmary because it's so beautiful. Hineni muchan umazuman lekayim mitzvahs achila ushtia b'yom ha-kippurim. Right? So before you shake lulav, you say hineni muchan umazuman. Some people say. Before you do lots of mitzvahs, people have this practice that they say hineni muchan umazuman. So the old Machzorim in Europe had a paragraph that before a patient on Yom Kippur is engaging in the act of eating, I should say, hineni muchan umazuman lekayim mitzvahs achila ushtia b'yom ha-kippurim. And what mitzvah is that? The mitzvah of a chai bahem. And I think the same should be, like, I wish we had a sign in the infirmary that said, before I administer treatment to a patient on Shabbos, I should say, hineni muchan umazuman, to observe Shabbos exactly the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to observe it. Where 50 weeks of the year I observe Shabbos in one way, there are two Shabbosos a year when I'm here in camp that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to observe Shabbos in a different way, and I don't feel guilty, and I'm proud because I'm doing exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do. And I think that's the perspective we all need to have. Let me show you something that I hope will move you the same way it did move me. Look at this. You'll see that this is like a very strange photocopy here. Anyone ever saw this? This is a very famous picture. If you look online, you can see it in its entirety, and it's a color picture. I'll show you in a second what it is. This was written... Oh, I'm sorry. Here. You got this? Hey.
Oh, sorry.
So, here.
Blue.
Exactly. Yeah. I come prepared. Hey, I do my job. Okay? So here... This was actually written... Here, take mine. This was actually written by... If you pass out, we have plenty of people to take care of you. This was actually written...
Absolutely.
This was actually written by Rabbi Yisachar Bernard Davis, who was the Rav in Bergen-Belsen. What is this? This was found after the war. What it is a piece of paper that he wrote that he handed out before Pesach when they were there in the camps. And it says, Lefnei achilas hachametz yomar bekavanas halev. Here they were in Bergen-Belsen with nothing to eat. They were starving. And all they had were some leftovers of some scraps of bread and peanut and potato peel somewhere, if they were lucky enough to find such a thing. Now obviously there's no doubt about it that they had a heter to eat it, if you can even call it food. But he said it was chametz, and people were uncomfortable with the fact that they were going to have to eat chametz on Pesach. It's amazing. This is what they were thinking about. This is where their heads were. And he authored the following little paragraph, and he handed it out in Bergen-Belsen, and he says, Lefnei achilas hachametz yomar bekavanas halev. Before you eat the chametz this year on Pesach, you should say the following. Avinu shebashamayim, hine goli viyadua lefanecha, it is clear before you, sheretzoneinu lasas ritzoncha. All we want in life is to do what you want from us. V'lachog ischag ha-pesach ba'achilas matzah. We know that on a regular year we eat matzah. U'v'shmiras isra ha-chametz. Achal zos da'va libenu. Unfortunately, we are pained by the fact she'hashibud ma'akev osanu, that we're here stuck in a concentration camp. V'anachnu nimtzaim b'sakanas nefashos. And all of us have our lives in danger. And therefore, hinenu muchanim u'mezumanim l'kayim mitzvosecha v'chay bohem. And now as we engage in the act of eating our chametz on Pesach, we are engaging in a mitzvah of exactly what you want us to do, which is v'chai b'hem, as the Torah tells us, al-kein, and in the merit of what it is that we're doing, we ask tfilasenu, shetechayenu, uskaimenu, v'sigalenu, b'meheira, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you should give us life in the merit of the mitzvah that we are doing, and that we should have the opportunity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a Lev Shalem and with good health. And I think that is such a beautiful context, such a beautiful perspective for all of us to have as we engage in the observance of Shabbos the way we will this week. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're doing your mitzvah, we're doing exactly what you asked all of us to do, and in the schus, in the merit of what it is that we all are engaging in, we ask, Kein techayenu, uskaimenu, v'sigaalenu, you should give us the opportunity to be healthy, to be strong, to be well. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Shabbos and Aruch Chaim, that if you have someone on Shabbos who is zaris, who rushes to go get involved in what it is that they need to do for Pikuach Nefesh, hareze meshubach, that is praiseworthy, that is something that is admirable. V'hashoel, but someone who stops to ask a shayla instead of doing immediately what needs to be done, hareze shofech damim, writes the Shulchan Aruch, seconds count. We know that it makes a difference. We know that critical care is something that is so important and we cannot delay, we cannot wait. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch says, Hashoel, someone who bothers to ask a shayla. Again, the time to ask shaylas is now, is today, before Shabbos. The time is not on Shabbos itself, when we're busy dealing with a patient, to start thinking and worrying, oh, maybe we're not doing this right. No, the time to think about it is now, to set up whatever we can in advance, to make sure that we are well prepared. And so much so, the Mishnah Berurah adds from the Yerushalmi, that the Hanishal, the rabbi who was asked the shayla, hareze maguna, shame on the rabbi. So my father told me once from Rav Schwab that Rav Schwab once told him, what's wrong with the rabbi? What did he do wrong? I have an innocent person in my community who doesn't know anything, doesn't know Hilchos Shabbos. He comes to my house and asks me a shayla about pikuach nefesh. Should I go to the hospital or not? What did I do wrong? I don't know anything. Oh, your grandfather, right? So Rav Schwab told my father, it means you're a lousy rabbi. He said it much nicer. Why? Because if your community doesn't know that the highest priority in life is life itself, it means you're doing a really poor job at giving over the priorities that you stand for. So maybe it means somebody skipped the shiur that day. They didn't hear it. The answer is, if your community doesn't just know by knowing you that this is what's important to you, that this is what's most valuable to you, it means you're a very poor communicator. It means you don't know how to give over the most important Torah values to the people that need them most. So I want to get into a few of the particulars. Unless everyone wants to go already. Do we have a few more minutes? Is that okay? So I want to get into a few of the particulars. Number one, and I say this to the staff members, I think it doesn't need to be said, but we're going to say it anyway. The heter to do things on Shabbos, Mishum Pikuach Nefesh, applies to the campers. It does not apply to staff members. Shabbos is Shabbos here. If a staff member comes along and says, I need the air conditioner changed, not because I have a camper in the bunk, but because I'm in a specialty bunk and we're just hot, there's no heter. The same way there's no heter to do things at home. Again, there are certain circumstances where amir l'nachri is permissible. But we don't just have a carte blanche heter to do whatever we want just because we are on this campus and we're doing certain things for campers. We need to bifurcate between who it is that we're treating, who it is that we're responding to. This evening, we're all going to be Mekabel Shabbos at the same time. Because we are one sivur, the Shulchan Aruch writes, everyone's Kabbalah Shabbos goes into effect for the entire campus. All of us are shayach, are connected, are considered related to the tzibur, and one Kabbalah Shabbos that we do is in effect for everybody. Mincha this evening is at 7:30, which means we're probably going to get to Mizmor Shir at 7:50 or so, something like that, 8 o'clock, probably more realistic. Mincha's not going to start at 7:30, whatever it is. By 8 o'clock, all malach on this campus should stop. Even if you say that you're going to be Mekabel Shabbos later, the Shulchan Aruch writes, when you have one Sibur with one minion, everyone has to do the same thing. Obviously, if you have to do something medically, then you should do that as you would otherwise. But in terms of our own preparation, we should just be ready for Shabbos in advance. I did have a counselor on a different program. Give me one second. I did have a counselor on a different program, and I do want to get to your comment. I just think this is a humorous story. There was a Shabbaton, not of Camp Simcha, of a different program that I'm involved with, where there was somebody who came back from a Shabbaton, and I said, did you meet this and this counselor over Shabbos? They came in from Israel. And they said, you know, I really didn't have a chance to meet this person. I said, how could it be? This woman told me that she's like the major head counselor or whatever it is. She's very involved, one of the administrators. Like, how did you not see her? She said, well, the second half of Shabbos, she was nowhere to be found. She was in her room. I said, why? She said, well, I'm from Israel. Shabbos is over for me at like you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because in Israel, Shabbos is over, so she was doing her own thing. She was, you know, on her computer, on her phone, doing things. I'm like, wow, like, this is insane. So maybe it's worth somebody mentioning to the Israelis here. We have about 50 or 60 Israelis who are here, and, you know, God bless them, they're amazing. But I don't know, somebody on another program made such a mistake and thought, if Shabbos is over in Israel at 1 o'clock in the afternoon here, then that means Shabbos is over here. So things that maybe to us might seem obvious, yeah, which anyway is something just to keep in mind. Yes, Dr. Steinhaus.
Sorry, I just wanted to mention to everybody, we need to get a key. We can't use electronics on Shabbos. We don't have keys to the rooms. So we all need to get a key.
Okay.
There's a set of keys in
the desk. There's a set of keys in the desk.
Okay. Okay, that's a very important point. We'll make sure to have a key for the room so that you don't have to use the fobs. But make sure also that those rooms are locked. It's unsafe for anyone here that those rooms should be opened and available to the public. Can you maybe write down your question? We'll get to more specifics in a few minutes. Okay. I think the working assumption that we have here in the campus, and this is something I spoke to Rabbi David Feinstein myself, I heard it from his own mouth. The working assumption in Camp Simcha, the Camp Simcha special is very different. The working assumption in Camp Simcha is anyone who is here on the campus, we have a registration process. We don't just accept everybody into Camp Simcha. There's a whole host of reasons why kids are here and why some kids are not here, unfortunately. But everyone who is here, Rabbi David Feinstein was very comfortable saying, is begeder chol sheyesh b'sakana. We assume that every camper who is here is either on active chemo or just coming off of a chemo round, and therefore, Rabbi David said, we have every right to assume that the needs of all the campers on this campus should be considered as critical care need as a chol sheyesh b'sakana. That being said, the Shulchan Aruch says that a chol sheyesh b'sakana, we do everything to treat them on Shabbos, whatever it is that they need. This is why we instruct the counselors and all staff members that if anything happens on Shabbos, we respond, we make a phone call, we call one of the medical professionals to check it out, even if it's something that seems minor. And what I tell them all, and I think we all need to stress this point, is it's the protocol of the camp and we cannot break it. Even if you live at home and you have a special needs individual in your family, or you have a member of your family who's undergoing some kind of treatment and you've seen this and this is not what you do at home, when we're here with a tzibur of this size that has such critical care necessities, we cannot break the protocol. And I'm going to give you a story that I think is very illustrative and important to really bring this point home. Rav Asher Weiss told me a number of years ago that there's a machlaka in the army, in the IDF, there's a unit of the army that has women only in this unit, and many of them are Haredi women who enlist in the IDF. And what they do is there's a humongous wall of hundreds of screens from video cameras in Arab villages, and the protocol is any day of the week, if you see anything out of the ordinary, whatever it might be, you must report it to the army immediately. Even if you think it's nothing, you must report it to the army immediately, to the commander. You cannot ignore anything. It was Leil Shabbos. There were a number of religious women who were on call watching all these screens, and they noticed a civilian accident. There was an Arab who was driving a truck. His truck got in an accident. It knocked over a light post, a lamppost. He got out of his truck. He was screaming and yelling. His truck was destroyed. The lamppost fell down. He was so upset. An ambulance came, treated him, brought him to the hospital. She said, it's a civilian accident. Why should I report it? She did not report it. And 3 days later, there were chayalim who were killed right there. Why? Because it turns out that there was a video camera on top of the lamppost. The Arabs wanted to knock it down. They decided to stage this accident, make it look like a civilian accident, when it was all intentional. It was all done with kavana. It was all done because they wanted to knock it down. This woman did not realize. As a result of that, they realized the camera was down, and they killed a number of chayalim who were standing there the very next week. Protocol is very important. And when you're dealing with a critical mass like we have here, it doesn't matter what they do at home. It doesn't matter how they would treat a member of their family who has the same issue and the same illness. It's not the same when you're dealing with one person as when you're dealing with many. And that's something that we all need to keep in mind. I know for us it's obvious, but we really need to impress that upon the other staff members as well. We know that during a cancer session, we sometimes have blood and urine samples that need to be brought in. That is not, obviously it needs to be checked out, it needs to go to a lab, but it's not something that's emergent. It's not something that needs to be done within a couple of minutes. And that is why we have designated a non-Jew on the campus who's going to drive those samples out, and we will get the results back. Does that sound okay to you? That's the plan. There is really no reason why we should have... It used to be that we had a counselor driving. There's no reason at all to have a counselor or a nurse or a doctor driving. To drop off a sample does not take any kind of medical expertise, and that is why we have a non-Jew who is designated to do it. We try as much as we can, when applicable, to do certain activities al yidei shinui. By doing something with a shinui, that already knocks down any potential malacha to be something that is only midirabana. So that's why a shinui is something that is certainly recommended. Not always possible. You know, the example I always give is, if you need to drive a patient to the hospital on Shabbos, you should not drive with a shinui. That would not be something that we would advise, not a good idea. Sometimes a shinui is important and sometimes it's not. I want to just remind everyone, a number of years ago, it was actually my first summer in camp, we had an emergency here. And I never really appreciated the words of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch until we actually had the experience here, and I really appreciated what it meant. Shulchan Aruch says, when you have something on Shabbos that needs to be done for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, it should be done Ayideh HaGdolim. So there are two different ways to interpret that. The Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam have a little bit different wording. Some say it means it should be done by adults and not by children. You don't send a little kid to take care of it. As an adult, you should be the one to do it. But others say no, it means the leaders. Ayideh HaGdolim means the leadership of the community should be the ones to be the first to run out to take care of it. I always saw that Rambam. I never appreciated it till we had the emergency here, and I saw counselors were hesitating to get involved until I, as the camp rabbi, got in the car to make them comfortable getting in the car as well. And I was totally comfortable doing that. And it was only then, after the leadership of this camp got into the car and showed them that we are willing to take the leadership role and you should follow. And it's important that all of us feel that we are the Gedolim. We are the ones. It doesn't mean you have to be a Gadol be Yisrael. It means you have to be someone who takes responsibility, who takes a leadership position, because other people are looking to see how you react and how you respond. Giving medications on Shabbos. When I first came to camp, they had some kind of system where they used to have stickers on the pages. In Camp Simcha Special, it's much more dangerous than it is in Camp Simcha Regular. In Camp Simcha Special, they give out over 800 pills a day. And that is a lot of pills. That's a lot. And I was very concerned the first summer that I was here that this kind of system of printing out papers and having stickers, you know, chalila v'chas, that can really lead to a terrible mistake. And we know that something can go wrong, especially when you're keeping track of so many people at the same time. The system that we devised then for Camp Simcha Special was that we do use laptops, we do use tablets, they use it with a shinui, so we bought these thimbles, plastic thimbles, that you're able to chart the medications or chart other important information that on any other day of the week you would feel is important to chart at the time. On Shabbos you should be doing the same, without hesitation. And the reason why is because some say, what do you mean? On a computer, how are you not writing? Writing is far worse. Writing with a pen is a malacha de'araisa. Writing on a computer is probably only an issa d'rabbanan. Doing it al yidei shinui makes it even less. So I'm fairly comfortable, and that's what our poskim have told us to do as well, that on Shabbos, if you need to chart medication, if you need to turn on the computer and put in some kind of information that's relevant for the patient, for us to know that after Shabbos, it's important that you do so. We have the thimbles in the office, hundreds of them lying around. Bracha knows where they are. And if we don't have it, we'll get some more. Not a big deal. We'll go to Staples. But it's something that we certainly should be mindful of. There are a number of kids who are on growth hormones. I was told we have at least one camper this session. Obviously, a growth hormone is something that we need to do on schedule. It's something that we need to continue to do every day. We'll continue to give those shots. And that is something that we should not do al yidei shinui, because giving a shot al yidei shinui is really not a good idea. We have a number of campers who need certain ointments on Shabbos. If we're able to do that al yidei shinui, meaning try to rub it on with the back of your hand, that's something that obviously we should do. But if you're doing it in critical care at a time when there's a crisis and you're trying to triage, don't start thinking about all these things. I think you just need to do what needs to be done. Now, I know everyone's boiling hot. Are you okay?
Yes, I am.
can I just transition to one final piece, which I think is also very important, and that is, what happens when you have something that is not directly related to the medical treatment of the patient? So how do we look at that? When you have a situation where, for example, a camper asked to turn the lights on, the lights off, turn a machine on, a machine off. We've had many counselors in the past who had non-religious kids who were stuck in the infirmary over Shabbos in isolation, and they asked the counselors to play video games with them, and it's very uncomfortable and it's very difficult. What are we supposed to do? The Shulchan Aruch writes very clearly, Kol sheregilin lasos lo b'chol. Whatever we would do for a patient during the week is what, when we're talking about a chol sheyesh b'sakana, when we're talking about this category of sick people, which we have here, Kol sheregilin lasos lo b'chol. Whatever we would do during the week is what we need to feel comfortable doing on Shabbos as well. And the Magen Avraham says, Afal pi shebeminiyaso sadavar embo mishum sakana. Even if I withhold from that treatment, the person's not going to get sick. But still, if it's going to calm the mind and the psyche of the patient, this is what we need to do. There's a great example. The Gemara gives a case about a woman who's in active labor. And she asked the doctors to please turn the lights on. So the Gemara says you're allowed to turn the lights on. Ask the Gemara, Pshita. You need a Gemara to teach you that if a woman in labor asks you to turn the lights on, we should turn the lights on. The doctor should have turned the lights on anyway. What are you delivering a child without the lights on? It's ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. So what is the Gemara referring to? The conclusion is, the case in the Gemara is where the woman is blind. And she really doesn't see what's going on. She's in labor. She has this idea in her head that it's not light enough in the room. I needed to go buy a portable light, turn the lights on in order that it should be easier for you to do the delivery. The doctors are all looking at each other and laughing and saying, there are plenty of lights in here. We don't need anything more. Says the Gemara, you go buy the portable light and turn it on just for Yisuva Daita, just to calm the feelings of this woman, even though it's not medically necessary at all. Even though there is no medical benefit whatsoever that's going to come from this malacha that we're doing, the Gemara writes, in that case, this is what we do. Why? Because we have a concept of Yisuva Daita. When you're dealing with someone who is in such a critical state, you never know what's going to tip them in one direction or the other. And we've all seen it. Just look here in the other direction. When campers are made to feel so happy and so out of their element, it gives them life. We've all seen it. We've seen that it extends life. We've seen that it gives them the courage to fight. We've seen that it gives them the ability to want to live on. Even if they have a horrible prognosis and a horrible diagnosis, we have the opportunity to do that for them, and therefore, Mishum Yisuva Daita, we have the right to do so. And that is something that is very important for all of us to be aware of. I remember a number of years ago, there was a young boy who was in high school in New York, and his parents lived in Canada. And he had an acute medical emergency on Friday afternoon, and the yeshiva rushed him to the hospital. He was in critical care in the ICU, and his parents called my father from Canada and said, we live in Canada. We're not here to take care of our son. He's in the ICU in one of the hospitals in Manhattan. What are we supposed to do? And my father said, you get on the plane on Leil Shabbos, and you fly into New York, and you go be there with your son, because no one's going to advocate for him. So maybe both parents don't need to be there. One of them flew in, and they landed on Friday night, and it's important that we think about that. The parent is not a doctor. The parent doesn't know how to administer medical treatment, but the parent knows how to advocate for the patient, because it's their child, and there's nobody who can do that better than a parent. My father was totally comfortable saying that, and I think that that's something that's very important for us to think about as well. When we have a camper that unfortunately needs to go to the hospital on Shabbos, unfortunately it happens every so often, so we know that we drive them out, but sometimes what becomes very uncomfortable is that the staff member who goes along feels very uncomfortable about that. What I explained to all of them is, I spoke to them last night already, we cannot afford to have a doctor, a nurse, or an EMT or a paramedic stay in the hospital the rest of Shabbos with this camper. It's unrealistic. Why? Because we need all the medical professionals here on the camp taking care of the other 85 patients that we have here, and it's not good enough to send away one of the medical professionals to do that. So we will send a staff member, sometimes we'll send two, but again, it can be done the right way, it can be done in the proper way. We will send food for them, but just to think about that, and I think we should spend the next couple of hours thinking about, in anticipation, what it is that could potentially come up on Shabbos and how it is that we can circumvent some of those issues. So now let's get into some questions. Yeah?
A lot of the kids use the golf carts to get back and forth who are tired or not. Like, at what, there's not going to be golf carts running on
right.
Moving, you know, so
our wheelchairs are all over camp. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't run the golf carts on Shabbos, but obviously we do run medical transports on Shabbos if it's necessary. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah. There are
you're holding on to your question for a very long time. Yeah.
I have a bunch of questions.
Okay.
So one of the questions is, you mentioned
maybe just
staff.
Say it louder. What?
You mentioned briefly about staff.
Yeah.
The staff member comes in with...
So very often we're going to have a staff member who comes in with a sore throat, and they're not sure is it strep, or is it just exhaustion because they haven't slept since they came to camp? Dr. Steinhardt's agreed with me, and we'll make sure it's the case now that you still feel this way. Let's put them in isolation until after Shabbos. There's no reason. We don't even have rapid strep tests here. What? You told me we don't? We do? And do you feel it's important that we do a rapid strep test on Shabbos itself? Dr. Steinhardt feels comfortable that we can put the staff member in isolation until after Shabbos. Not a big deal. And we'll treat them after Shabbos.
It's a clinical question. If the patient has big lymph nodes and a high fever, we can check it. So
obviously, to make sure the infection doesn't spread.
But if it's just a sore throat, it will wait.
Exactly. So I think...
Assuming it's like a non-emergency issue that they're coming in with.
Mm-hmm.
What I always think of is, if he goes home, would he go to the doctor with this? If he doesn't, then
we shouldn't do it here either.
Why is he coming to the infirmary?
Let's say the counselor, because they're camper. I guess if
we could arrange someone else. We have rotators. We have plenty of rotators. Plenty of specialties.
Really,
yeah.
For the very specifically complicated kids whose counselors are.
Right. But I think we have to take it on a one-on-one. Yeah.
Right.
If we have one of those, then we need to deal with that in a very particular way. Yeah.
Can I change the subject about a different question?
Absolutely.
Okay. The Shabbos.
I'm nervous where
situation.
This is going.
No. Okay. The Shabbos Goy situation. So is it just that he's a driver? Like, I want to know when I'm turning off buttons or whatever, am I supposed to, like, is there a Shabbos Goy that's supposed to be able to facilitate that, or do I just turn the buttons off on my own?
Depends for what?
I have a whole list of buttons I'll be needing.
So, what we do have, Nachman, what time do we have someone circling the campus tonight?
Maybe we should have a chavruta.
Listen carefully.
Okay.
Yeah.
For anybody that needs. Just right at the entrance to the dining room.
Okay, so we have someone in the dining room till 12 who's available to go with you to turn on or off anything. A light, an air conditioner, any machine. In Simcha special...
In terms of, like, that's something that's clinical, that's...
That's not a question. That's not what we want.
Yeah. No, can we just talk about this later? Like, can I meet with you later?
Absolutely.
And just go over
it would be my pleasure.
Thing? I just don't.
No problem.
No one else.
But in Simcha special, we had shifts of people going around on Friday night because almost every camper has a machine that needs to be adjusted, needs to be turned on or off. In Simcha regular, that is not the case.
Even we, to charge a wheelchair or something like that they don't need right now. That was more the idea. Anything that has to do with medical, we don't even want that person. That's not the person's job.
And again, when you're turning on and off a machine, you're a medical professional. You know, I would never say this to the counselors because they don't know how to differentiate. But you know, turning off a machine with your knuckle and taking an extra second to do that is not going to endanger the patient at all. And you know how to do it, and I think that's something that we should encourage. It's something that we should try our best to do whatever we can. Not such a big deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, it says that the leaders should be taking it. If you are there and a guy is there, it's your responsibility to take care of the patient.
Yeah.
You don't shirk it off to somebody else.
Right.
So.
Again.
Do it.
A great exception to the rule is when we need to drive a blood sample out. So all of us in the medical, all of you in the medical field know that is not an emergency, and we can have a non-Jew do that with ease and with comfort, and it's nothing that makes us nervous at all. And that's why we designate that kind of job to a non-Jew. But
yeah,
many
but
of the
I feel the same way about all the things that I have to do. Like,
so we'll talk after.
Could do it.
So we'll talk after.
It's your mitzvah.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
What else? Yes.
Shh.
Let's hear. Yeah. Sorry. I can't hear. Maybe let's all listen to the question. Yeah. Yeah.
Documentation for a patient who comes in. Normally, you document the visits, right? They get entered into the computer as a visit, then you put on some.
Right.
So, should we be doing that as regular? Should we be doing that after?
I think we should be doing it as regular, unless Bracha pointed out to me yesterday that on regular days, you're so busy and you don't always chart everything immediately. and sometimes you wait. If the reason why you're waiting is because it's Shabbos, I don't think that's a legitimate reason to wait to chart. If the reason why you're waiting is because you have 10 other things going on, and on a Tuesday you would also wait to chart it later, and okay, then chart it later. You know, but I think that that's the way we have to gauge it.
So there's two different parts. There's entering them into the computer, like when they come in, they get registered as a visitor.
Right.
Is that going to be them? Because if they're not entered in the first place, then they can't even chart on my end.
Do I have to actually process?
Yeah.
Would it not make sense to have a